The following is a paid program on AM 1220 KLBB. The views expressed do not necessarily represent the views of the station owner or management or Endurance Broadcasting, LLC.
Oh, let the sun beat down upon my face. Stars to fill my dreams.
Hello, everybody. John Tetzloff here. I think this is our fifth show of boating with Wolf Marine and Tetzloff Yacht Sales. And we've got a couple good guests today. And just a little bit information about Tetzloff Yacht Sales. You can go to the website at tetzloffyachtsales.com. Call me at 651-214-9463. And the address is 575 Main Street North, right downtown Stillwater.
And I'm Eric Wolf, Wolf Marine, 1 mile north of downtown Stillwater, intersection of Highway 95 and 96. I can be reached at area code 651-439-2341. Check us out on the web, wolfmarine.net. And today we have a very special guest. Some of you might think that it's a little odd for me to bring in one of my competitors, but you know what they say, to keep your competitors close and your friends closer or something like that. But
pretty close.
Yeah, I think it's your friends close and your competitors even closer. Who we have here today is Rick Chapman from Sunnyside Marina. He is also a friend of mine. So, yes, I have my friend and competitor. So we're keeping him close here, keeping an eye on him. And he is here to talk today about the Minnesota Clean Marine Program. What it's all about and how it got started, so on and so forth. Rick, welcome aboard. Thank you for being our guest today.
Thank you very much.
And can you tell us exactly why did this program get started?
So really, it came from a Midwest Marina Association meeting, and the discussion was about how, as marina operators, can we establish the best management practices on our own so that at some point regulators aren't doing it for us.
Very good. What were some of the concerns that we had with regulations and so on and so forth?
So I guess, you know, there's a lot of regulations in and around running our marinas. It's everything. It's how we do maintenance on our boats. One of the big considerations for us when we were doing the program was how we take care of water as we're washing boats down in the fall. Not letting that water get back into the river. So all of those things are things that we were trying to do on our own before the regulars had a chance to do it for us.
Okay. And what are some of the objectives of other than, you know, that? Is there some really important objectives that this Clean Marine program's going to come out with?
Well, I think that, again, through these best management practices, the idea is that we want to be the best stewards of our waterways as we possibly can be. You know, we understand and we accept the fact that we really can't call ourselves environmentalists since we're using fossil fuels to recreate. So what we're trying to do is the best we can under the circumstances and do the best we can to keep our waterways clean for the future.
All right. What are some of the requirements to become a clean marine?
So there are actually 300 best management practices. And what we did is we went through every one of those 300 best management practices, and we decided, and this was in conjunction with the regulatory agencies, with DNR, with MPCA, and we came up with the things that were actually required in order to be a clean marina. And then there was also a whole group of optionals. So the way it works is, in order to be a certified clean marina, you have to first reach 100% of all of those best management practices that apply to your operation, and you have to have 65% of the optional best management practices that apply to your marina operation. So it's pretty comprehensive.
So as it stands right now, how many marinas in Minnesota are considered clean marinas?
So we have 12 that are currently listed or certified as certified clean marinas, and then we also have pledges. So, and the idea is to hopefully turn those pledges into certified clean marinas in the next year or so.
And I have to readily admit that right now, Wolf Marine is not considered one of the clean marinas, but I am a pledged.
Absolutely.
And I will hear me out. I will be a clean marina by this summer.
All right.
With all the, you know, with good luck and everything else. How long does it take usually to certify a marina for to become a clean marina?
So the difficult part, as you know, Eric, as you're in the process, it's a self-evaluation process. So each marina operator, once they pledge, they have to go through this self-evaluation. They have to answer the questions to the things that apply to them, to their operation. And then they basically go through that. They go through and they give themselves a score. And if they meet 100% of the required BMPs, 65% of the optional BMPs, they give me a call, and we send out a certification committee, and that committee then goes to the site, and it's a one day deal.
Now, is there a benefit not only just to do the right thing and keep things clean? Is there some kind of a tax benefit with the state or anything for doing that?
Well, I haven't gotten to that point yet. I have seen in my own experience a savings to my insurance premiums for being a certified clean marina. So there is one benefit. I don't know, you know, how much that is, but there is a benefit. The rest of it is all just really how the public relates to us.
And is there a cost to become one?
I'm really glad you asked that, because this is a completely 100% volunteer organization. It's marina operators. We own it. And there is absolutely no cost. It was very important to us that there never be a cost to being a Minnesota Clean Marina. We do have flags that once you are certified, we have flags for sale if you want to fly the Clean Marina flag.
So you'll be looking for the flag flying down at Wolf Marine this summer.
Right on.
All right. And I think it's important for maybe some of our clientele to be looking out for this Clean Marine also, don't you? Yep. I mean, it's a great idea. Everybody else, you know, to keep the waters clean and the grounds clean also.
We certainly hope so, right? We hope that our boaters are going to be looking for that certification, and that's going to also boost our revenues.
So that the marina is going to be certified now. You just mentioned the boaters. Now, does every single boater have to get on board with that? Is it an option?
Well, good question, because what's really important about the Clean Marina program is we're not just training our facility operators and our technicians and our employees. We're also training those boaters, right? So it's making sure that the boaters are doing the right things, because just because I'm doing it in my operation doesn't mean that I don't have a boater that's out there doing something he shouldn't be doing. So that's a big part of the Clean Marina program, is making sure that we're training those boaters.
So you actually have a class that the boaters can take?
It's not a class. It's just outreach through our marina operations. I do it at Sunnyside through three meetings during the summer, and it's, you know, it's a Friday evening, 3 weeks in a row. I offer them free beer and pizza, and we go through the program.
Cool.
I'm there.
Yeah,
hey, free beer and pizza. You can't go wrong there. Is there one thing, maybe in particular, that some of the marinas have struggled to meet the requirement with?
I don't think I can think of any one particular. Well, some of the dock construction is probably one of the first things, because we're requiring that the dock floats be encapsulated. So if you've got any docks that have been out there a really long time and they don't have that as their float structure, that would be a real detriment.
Okay, and I actually do have some 30-year-old docks that I still have open. Styrofoam floats in it. We have slowly been converting as we can as the years go by, but that's something that we'll have to look at and probably retrofit for in the future.
So, Rick, everything that you sell in the shop there that's for sale for the boaters and the general public that want to buy some stuff from you are going to be the clean supplies.
They are, and again, that's part of that boater training. Right, trying to get them to use the right products, trying to get them to use products that are gonna be compliant. It's not necessarily one of the requirements of the best or for the Clean Marina program. It is one of the optional best management practices. So it helps us to get to that 65%.
Yeah, that's good. Now all you have to do is get rid of that dang fertilizer that's coming into the river.
All right, are we ready for a break here?
I think we are. After we talk about ourselves a little bit again, we have
okay.
to do that. This is
absolutely.
The Wolf Marine and Tetzloff Yacht Sales boat show here. Anyway, Tetzloff Yacht Sales, 651-214-9463, and TetzloffYachtSales.com.
And Eric from Wolf Marine, wolfmarine.net, area code 651-439-2341 is the phone number. You can email us at info@wolfmarine.net. We'd like to hear from you. I'd also like to hear from you if you've heard the show here. It's always fun to hear people that have heard us on the radio and just mention that, hey, I heard you on the radio. I get a kick out of it. I think John also does.
Yeah, that's really nice to hear. I also would like to hear if there are some topics you'd like us to cover. If you have any ideas, you can definitely give us an email or a phone call, and we'd definitely like to hear from you.
Yeah. And I'd like to get a big thank you out to Rick from Sunnyside Marina, Rick Chapman, and also from the Minnesota Clean Marine Program. Appreciate your time today, Rick. You've been real informative.
Yeah, thanks a lot. That worked out nice.
You've been a great guest, and we'll be talking to you soon, I'm sure.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Convenient location and protected bay. Shouldn't that be where you harbor your boat? If so, dock your boat at Wolf Marine in Stillwater. Hello, this is Eric Wolf. After all, why have a boat if you can't get out onto the water and enjoy it? My grandparents, along with my father, established this marina at the intersection of Highway 95 and 96, just a mile north of Stillwater in 1957. But being just north of downtown, you avoid heavy traffic that keeps you from getting out onto the water. And in our protected bay, we have hundreds of slips ranging in size from 16 to 50 feet, so we can accommodate a variety of boats. Not sure if this is the best place to keep your boat? Come see me. I can answer your questions so you can decide the best place to dock your boat. And because Wolf Marine is a three-generation family-owned marina, you can count on consistency from year to year. Talk to me and get out on the water faster at Wolf Marine.
Hello, this is John Tetzloff of Tetzloff Yacht Sales. Everything might be frozen right now, but if you are already thinking of getting out on the water in your new boat, now is the time to talk to me. Whether you're looking at a houseboat, cruiser, motor yacht, or something else. And with the largest selection of boats in the area, not only do we have boats in Stillwater, but we also broker boats up and down the St. Croix, the Mississippi, Lake Minnetonka, all over North America, and even overseas. I will help you find the best boat for you, and because my name is the name on the sign, I will work hard for you before and after the sale. To enjoy the water this summer, come visit TetzloffYachtSales.com.
Hello, for the second part of our show. This is John Tetzloff with Tetzloff Yacht Sales.
And I'm Eric Wolf with Wolf Marine.
And we have a great guest, Robert Bilger. He is from the west side of the city, more in the Minnetonka area. Boy, this guy has got a background, but I'm currently working with him as a broker. We're going to do some deals together and see if I can sell some of his boats, and he can sell some of mine. But I'm looking at his resume, and this guy has done it all, selling boats, moving boats as a captain. He actually was a backup actor in a movie at one time. So this guy, it's pretty cool. In fact, I'll see if I can get my get his autograph on this resume when we're done. Of course, I'm not joking either. Anyway, Robert, would you like to give us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, I've got a very extensive background in the Lake Minnetonka area. I was born and raised on that lake. And I actually started working on the boat business back in 1964. So I'll let you guys do the math on that. But that was before fiberglass boats. We were only playing with wood back then. So I actually watched fiberglass boats evolve and come into play and be built, and go through the whole process of being overbuilt, and then everybody tried to figure out how to make that fiberglass thinner, and then they started putting cores in. So there's a lot of things that have happened in the marine industry in the time frame I've been in it.
Yeah. Yeah, you've seen a lot of that. What are now? I remember some of the Chris Crafts, and there was somebody Chris Craft bought out. I think I can't remember the name of it, but they built those things so thick that those things could break ice.
Oh, the original Chris Craft boats. The fiberglass actually was almost an inch thick. It was 3/4 to 7/8, and it was all solid fiberglass and resins. There weren't any core materials in it.
Yeah, some of those old 68, 69 Commanders. What a well-built boat, great boat. Yeah. Even today, there's a ton of them still around. One of my more favorite boats. I think they look great. Of course, it's not something you jump in and give it throttle and go fast, that's for sure. But as far as almost a trawler-style boat, I don't think that there was ever a better-built boat than that.
Yeah, it's got a very heavy displacement. They go through the water and the waves really, really well, yeah. especially on the river. When you start running around, you've got a lot of yachts that are 50 feet and bigger.
Beautiful boats.
And you can go out there in a 30 or a 35 Chris Commander, and you just slice right through it.
Yeah.
The boats were very heavy built and really did a nice job going through the water.
Yeah, they're super boats, and like Eric said, there's still a lot of them out there, and they're looking good. I really like the lines on those boats. Now, a big part of your job, or I'm sorry, one of your jobs that you, I think, did for about 20 years was being a boat surveyor. What do you, how'd you get into that?
Well, I get into that. There weren't a lot of surveyors back in the late 70s, early 80s, so that whole thing kind of evolved through the 1980s. And everybody started realizing if you got a 10-year-old or older boat, you for sure want to spend the money and do the survey on it.
What were some of the tools of the trade becoming a surveyor? I've heard so many good and bad things, like a moisture indicator.
Moisture meters can be good and bad. It totally depends on the guy using the meter. But more importantly, you have to know where was the boat the previous 30 days or 6 months or even the last couple weeks prior to that surveyor walking up to the boat. The boat's been in the water and it's been hauled out for a survey, moisture meters are always going to read high. Even if the boat was dry docked and was sitting, but the previous 3-4 days it rained, the whole deck is going to have excess moisture in it. So you have to you really want a guy with experience and pays attention to where the boat was that last week or 30 days prior to the survey, because the moisture meter doesn't per se tell the truth.
So there's more things to take in account than just what the meter tells you.
You have to take a lot of things into account.
I mean, that was a great question because, yeah. I mean, there's been times where I've asked the seller could we do a core sample, because he was so adamant that there wasn't moisture in a stringer or a deck, and so we did it, and you do that core sample and pull out dry wood, and yeah, you're right. That is a science in itself, just that moisture meter.
And the next tool of the trade, I see a lot of surveys being done down at the marina for John and other brokers. But the biggest thing that they use, it seems to be, is a soft face hammer.
Yeah, if you use a solid plastic or a little pneumatic hammer, you can go around every square inch of the boat and listen for tone changes when you impact it. And you're going to know, we really going back to, you need a surveyor with experience, because there's so many different laminates, core structures. What did they use? How did they build it? What's the gel coat? What's the resin? What was the process in assembling the thing? All of that makes different sounds. So you're going to get different sounds in the bottom. You're going to get a different sound in the transom. You're going to get a different sound in the hull side. And you're going to get different sounds in the deck. So you really need the raw experience of how did they build the boat, because when you get to the area where they put a stanchion or a pulpit, that's going to be solid glass in the initial area, and then the core is outside it. So the tone's going to change. Somebody without experience is going to go, oh, wait a minute, it's bad right there. It's not. They hit the edge of the core.
What are some of the other things that you generally look real close at?
Well, when I first walk up to a boat, the very first thing I look at, believe it or not, is a rub rail.
Okay.
I immediately walk around the boat and look at the rub rail. I want to know who drove it, how they drove it. Is it scarred? Is it chafed? Has it been up against steel posts on a dock? Is there wood chips in the screws? Guys always moving heavy down a wood post or something like that. Gives you start to get a feel for how the boat was handled and taken care of. And then you go down the hull sides, you're looking for separation, spider web and cracking, anything like that going down the sides. But into the bottom, when you get into the bottom of the boat and the planing strikes, now you don't want to see any separations or any cracks whatsoever. And vertical cracks in the edge of the planing strikes tell you that the boat has absorbed moisture. Up here, northern half of the country, we go through freezing every winter. So as that moisture freezes and expands and thaws out again in the spring, those vertical cracks indicate there's moisture in the bottom of those strikes sitting up against the planing surface. go to the transom, same thing. You can get in the back. There can be spider webbing is typically an impact damage, but a solid vertical crack either in the transom or the planing strakes at the bottom indicate there's already moisture there. I don't need a moisture meter to tell me that there's already been a moisture problem in the bottom of the boat.
Other spots that I see small cracking is like where the railings meet the deck, where they put a screw in. Yep. Is that something to be really concerned about?
There, again, you need somebody with real experience to make that determination. If we go back to the old crisscross, which you like, those boats were so, the gel coat and the resins were so thick and heavy, they shrink with age as they dry out. They can crack on their own. There isn't a problem there. But that needs to be determined. Guys can run a screw in, run it in too heavy, and make a crack.
Yeah, I get it.
However,
Go ahead.
You can get simple heat, baking the stanchions, the cleats, anything metal on deck, especially if it's stainless steel, will absorb enough sunlight heat. It gets hot. All of the bedding compounds through probably almost the end of the 90s were petroleum-based. So the raw heat on a 90-degree day of sunshine sitting in the sun all day will dry up the bedding, and the bedding eventually turns to dust and blows out from underneath that fitting. If the fasteners are tight, it holds it in place, but now there's no bedding there. Every time it rains, if it has a wood core, the wood acts like a sponge, pulls the moisture in. Now you got a moisture problem in the deck around all those fittings, and nobody is told that deck hardware should be removed, rebedded, and replaced every 7 to 10 years. They still don't tell anybody that. You take boats in the southern half of this country, which we now have a problem with. The internet has people buying boats from the south. They're cheaper. There's a reason.
Yes.
Sunlight, salt water, all kinds of damage, exposure on a year-round basis instead of 6 months a year like in the Midwest. All of that gets all that bedding compound out. So there's so many boats with core damage and all kinds of stuff.
And it's relatively an easy fix for, you know, most people. And it's basically upkeep. And it's things that people have to keep in mind. Hey, we take around our windows in our houses every, you know, so often. We'll recalk the windows and the doors. And same thing has to be done with boats. People have to remember that.
Absolutely.
A lot of times I think people just think at boating, you know, it's just a fun thing. It's on the weekend. We're just going to let things slide a little bit. They're not on them 100%. But I tell everybody when they see something, don't let it go, because it's not going to get cheaper. It's only going to get more expensive. Be proactive. Yeah. Like you said, take those, zip those little screws out and recalk and do whatever you have to and put them back in and be on top of that.
Yeah, and if you can have moisture penetration up to like a basketball size at the base of a piece of hardware, whether it's a cleat or a deck fitting or a pulpit base or anything like that, stanchion base, if you would take the hardware off over the wintertime and heat lamp it, anything you put heat on, the moisture's drawn to the heat. So if the core only got wet and it didn't really start to rot or decay, you can heat lamp that, completely dry it out, rebed it, put it back together, it's as good as new.
Brand new, yep.
Yeah, but there's... Guys are not teaching deck hardware maintenance. They're just not doing it, and they really should get after it a little bit.
Yeah, because I think that's a big entry point for a lot of moisture.
Oh, yeah.
That and around the windows, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because you can take those windows out and do the same thing. You can reseat those and put those back in. And I see a lot of, when you go inside of a boat, you see a lot of water stainings right under those windows. Sometimes it's just condensation. Maybe they left the window open by accident and some water got in there. But you can kind of tell by the darkness of the stain that it's been there's a little rotten wood underneath that.
Yeah, and had somebody seen the first indications of that and disassembled it, took it apart, dried it, and put it back together, you're in great shape. And the boats in the 80s and the 90s, they didn't have the composites that we do now and the chemical balances and the caulkings and the materials we can use. We can rebed them now, and instead of like in the 80s it was going to last 7 to 10 years, we can make it last indefinitely. If you rebed something with 5200, the only person going to be mad at you after that is the guy that has to fix it if it gets damaged.
Has to take it apart, right.
Yeah, the guy's going to take 52. It apart won't be happy.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's also, it's an investment for these, for if you have a boat now, it's an investment for you to do this. You know, take a little time, take a little money. If you have to pay somebody to do it, do that, because long term, you're going to gain money in the very end.
Yeah, long term, especially when you want to go to sell it. Yep. And if you keep a log of the maintenance that you've done to it, and you take that out and you show a potential buyer, they just melt when they see that. If they can see dates and times and what you've done, I see that going a long way to selling a boat to a potential buyer.
Yeah, absolutely.
I also see, you know, when I show boats or when I first go to list them, you said you look at the reb rail. I look at that too. I mean, hey, that is a good indication.
Yep.
But I also go in the engine compartment and I lift that hatch and I look around and make sure that that's all clean. And I look in that engine compartment, and if that engine compartment is clean, I'll tell you what, I think that boat's been well maintained because someone's taken the time to keep that thing clean, especially if it's 20 years old. I've seen some 20-year-old engine compartments that look brand new, and right away I just knew that that boat was well maintained.
And we can go back to best management practices, back to our clean marine also on situations like that. A clean bilge means there's very little waste going overboard to hurt our waters. So, you know, I am, that's my pet peeve. I love a clean bilge. I've seen some of them that you just don't know.
I mean, that's illegal.
Yeah, it definitely is. Yeah, you don't want to have a sheen on the water from a dirty bilge.
So that goes over the side, and that can be an expensive ticket.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah.
Keep a clean bilge. Very important.
So what kind of, you know, I hear over time that people go, oh, I heard like in 1988, Blue Waters, you know, this had this problem and it had this problem. And what do you think when you hear comments like that?
Well, when you hear comments like that, you've got an individual that is solely focused on what he just said. He's talking about a specific boat built at a specific time, and there are certain segments in our industry that happened over time. The biggest thing was blistering in the 80s. You know, all of a sudden everybody saw blisters and they're in full panic mode, and it literally, as you know, stopped boats from selling, etc. Blistering on the bottom of a boat is a chemical reaction from an incompatible products. And the manufacturers were making mistakes because they were experimenting then with different gel coats, different resins, different processes of putting that all together, and they were getting caught with incompatible materials. All it did was create a blistering in the cosmetic surface of the boat. And there's what you got to remember. Gel coat is like the paint on your car. Now, gel coats on a boat are thick. They can be anywhere. They can be all the way up to 3/16 of an inch thick. So if the process in manufacturing isn't right and left air in there, you're going to end up with bubbling. You're going to end up with a moisture penetration that's going to split and pop. You're going to have blisters all over the bottom, and it's really ugly. But people were panicking on that when it was a cosmetic repair that could be done once properly with epoxies and never come back again.
Yeah, I saw that a lot, and you're right. It was a big concern to a lot of people when they saw that. They thought that it's going to cost them $20,000 to redo the bottom. It's, you can't put it in the water as is. But there is an easy fix to sand them out, grind them out, and like you said, use that two-part compound. I think that's what I used anyway.
Yep.
And reseal everything up, repaint it, and put the, you're good to go.
Yeah, and it's better than original manufacturer because the manufacturer's the ones that made the mistakes on that blistering problem and all those issues.
Those dang manufacturers, I tell ya.
Well, and everyone has a different process.
Do you see a correlation between the value of a boat and the quality of it? An expensive boat, good quality.
No, you might get in trouble with me on that one.
Here's what I say about that myself. I love all boats. All boats have a benefit. You know what that is? It's on the water.
Yep.
You're having a good time and you're making memories.
Yep.
Take care of that boat, and you shouldn't have too many problems.
It'll take care of you.
Well, and the depreciation schedule for a used boat is the same. It doesn't matter if it's got a Tier or a Cobalt name on it or if it's got a Bayliner or a Rinker name on it. Best, worst, anything in between, they all depreciate at the same rate.
Right. And those four boats you just mentioned are all great boats.
They are all great boats.
They get everybody on the water. Everybody gets out and experiences it. And then you come up with what you want to do for your family next or your style of boating, and you just keep moving on.
And the reason I mentioned that, I've mentioned it before, that you don't have to spend a ton of money to have a boat that you can go out and enjoy.
No, in fact, the best deals out there are used boats.
Absolutely.
John and I have both been in this long enough to know that there's a sweet spot, which is like in that 5 to 10-year-old range, but from 10-year-old and on, you should be able to buy a boat, get in and use it, and really get your money back if you maintain it and keep it just exactly it was the way
Absolutely.
You got it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a lot of boats out there, and you know, in Minnesota with that that no tax situation, that's also a big, huge benefit to buy used. But you know what? I'm all for the new boats because someday those new boats have to end up on our board someday, right?
Exactly.
So keep selling those new ones.
Yep. And they all have to have a place to go. So you know, We'll have room for them at Wolf Marine.
And Wolf Marine is a heck of a marina. Really love that place.
So, getting to the, near the end here, again, I am Eric Wolf at Wolf Marine at intersection of Highway 95 and 96. Give me a call, 651-439-2341.
And this is John Tetzloff, Tetzloff Yacht Sales at 651-214-9463, TetzloffYachtSales.com, right downtown Stillwater. And we'd really like to thank Robert Bilger for coming in here and giving us some really in-depth, intelligent information. That was great.
Thanks, Robert.
Thanks, guys.